Okay, we'll see what the family has for you, okay?
There's two of them, and they've been the exact same spot the whole time. They're out far, like I say that.
Oh, my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh, Jesus, please be a plane. Oh, please. Are you ready for this?
The cameraman said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular disc.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that you did like me.
Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Yes, these certainly are strange days indeed, and this program reflects the UFO side of the strangeness. Welcome to those of you listening here in Toronto, in Montreal, around the world on the web via the live stream, and to you wherever you are via this podcast. To program number 398, wherever you're listening, we'd like to hear from you. And you can email us at sdi@virtuallystrange.net to do that. Tonight, Dave Furlott with his take on it. And ufology's most respected researcher and author, Richard Hall, who is a relatively regular contributor to the program, and it's good to have him back on tonight, along with a man who has been around the Canadian field for many, many years. He puts together the UFO Digest website, ufodigest.com. Dirk van der Ploeg will join us for the last half hour of the program. June 24th is the date as we go to air. The first day of flying saucer history, if you want to put it that way, were in Mount Rainier and Mount Adams in Washington State back in 1947. Kenneth Arnold first saw what he at first thought were birds and then realized that they were disc-shaped objects skimming along the tops of the mountains. And, UFOs go back a lot further than that, but it was out of that sighting by Kenneth Arnold on June 24th, 1947, that the expression flying saucers came into being. Let's see what else happened on this St. John's Day, June 24th. Well, the deaths of various phenomena researchers, writers, and fans, people like Frank Scully, who died in 1964 on this date, Frank Edwards, who died near midnight on June 23rd, 1967, and Jackie Gleason, who died on June 24th, 1987, a good friend of Richard Nixon's, rumored, and it's probably a silly story, but rumored to have been taken by Richard Nixon privately and quietly after Nixon showed up at his house late at night. Just the two of them. Can't see the President of the United States slipping his bodyguards like that, but Nixon showed Jackie Gleason some alien bodies in storage, is the story. You never know. You never know. Jackie Gleason was just totally fascinated by the subject of UFOs. And if you take that date and go back 100 years, then there are many strange things that happened on that date. But another thing that happened on St. John's Day, June 24th, you all doubtlessly will remember the Mothman case in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Well, an Ohio resident's car was on the bridge from Ohio to Point Pleasant in West Virginia in 2003 on June 24th when it erupted into flames. And our thanks to cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman for those tasty tidbits about St. John's Day, June 24th. What else is going on here, ufologically speaking? A couple of interesting sightings that happened on June 2nd in Manitoba and in Bienfait, Saskatchewan. In Transcona, Manitoba, on June 2nd at around 11:45, a male witness was sitting on the deck with his wife and sister, and they all saw a glowing blue object behind the clouds. First, he thought it was a large spotlight scanning the sky from the Club Regent Casino until it hit an unclouded patch, and it was like a blue Roman candle, about that size if you were looking at it close up, only it was far away. It was moving horizontally east to west. The witness thought it was a near miss of a meteor because it broke up into three or four smaller lights and vanished very quickly. That's Transcona, Manitoba, which is on the outskirts of Winnipeg. And thanks to Brian Vike of Houston, British Columbia, Canada UFO Research, for that one. What a mouthful that is. HBCC, that's what it is. Bienfait, Saskatchewan, the same night between 11:30 and midnight. And then the witness says the kids were just getting out of the hot tub on a very calm, clear evening. Kids at 11:30 in the hot tub. Well, maybe. The dogs barked, and the witness's girlfriend and he turned to see, coming from behind the house and headed northward, a very bright bluish-green object streaking across the sky. They said they could even see it through the trees for its brightness. They both ran out onto the driveway, but it already disappeared. It was traveling at a very great speed, probably thousands of miles an hour, but without a sonic boom, more likely because of the distance it was away, although it did seem quite close, but could have also been a very great distance from them. The brightness and color would have been equivalent to a welding arc or magnesium burning, but with a hint of green. What struck the witness as odd was that it didn't make an arc due to gravitational pull. It went straight, he said. He said he's seen many, many meteors, but never with the duration of burn and the straightness in its path as that one. He still thinks what everybody saw was a meteor, but he says he's been known to be wrong in the past. Yeah, well, haven't we all? Wendy Connors is still not feeling great. Wendy Connors of Faded Discs, a regular contributor to this program, a UFO audio archivist, for those of you who have never heard of her before, produces some amazing, amazing CDs with many, many, many hours of UFO audio history as MP3 files. If you go to virtuallystrange.net and tonight's program listing, click Strange Days Indeed on the front page, you'll see an animated GIF there of various CDs that Wendy Connors has. You just click on that link and it'll take you to her website where they're all listed with their comments. And I guess I better set this one up before we get into it. This is back in February 16, 1978. Six objects were observed visually and tracked on radar at Shemya Air Force Base in Alaska. At the time of the visual sightings, an earthquake occurred. The voice you'll hear is the voice reporting of the FAA, the Federal Aviation Authority, duty officer calling Bob Gribble of the National UFO Reporting Center about the incident.
Mr. Research Center?
Yes, sir.
The FAA duty officer in Alaska. I have a UFO report.
Okay.
This is a little old. It occurred 17-08-22 Greenwich, and it was observed by the tower personnel at Shemya Air Force Base. It's way out the end of the Aleutian chain.
Right.
And they observed four primary radar targets with lights 2.5 to 3 miles north of Shemya, traveling at 90 knots. And people at Shemya reported they felt light earth tremors at the time of the sighting. Then the targets departed northwestbound, and a short time later, tower personnel reported they saw two targets southwest of Shemya without lights. And that's all the information I have at this time.
Well, we appreciate this very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you.
The FAA duty officer at Shemya Air Force Base in Alaska, the reporting to Robert Gribble of the National UFO Reporting Center on February 16th, 1978.
These are strange days indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Furlong.
I'm not sure if it's human nature or that some of us are more obstinate and stubborn than others or what it is. But there seems to be an awful lot of people on this planet that simply will not give up on a lost cause. Take, for example, the Flat Earth Society. This is a group of individuals that believe Christopher Columbus and all the other travelers who have circumvented the globe are liars. The Earth is not a round sphere, as has been proven by photographs taken from space or any other plethora of scientific facts showing that it must be round. Nope, it's all a plot. Because everyone knows that if the Earth were round, we'd all fall off. And if the planet were round, we'd have all kinds of problems traveling in a circular orbit at over 25,000 miles per hour. As they say, imagine what happens when you're driving and you take a corner too fast. Everything inside your car moves in a direction opposite to whatever turn you were making. Therefore, it only stands to reason that we'd all be feeling the effects of the sharp cornering at such speed. The Flat Earth Society is going to bat to prove that our planet is not round. It's flat. Flat as a pancake. You get to the end and you'll fall off. Fall off into what, you might ask? Well, I don't know. We'd just fall off. Then, of course, there are other things that people just refuse to give up on, even though there is proof that it was nothing more than a falsehood, like the belief in the alien autopsy film. There are individuals involved in ufology that maintain the footage is real. They insist that the alien autopsy film is a compilation of footage that was simply forgotten or hidden away by the person who shot it back in 1947 or thereabouts. They also insist that it shows the real autopsy of an alien being from another planet by Army doctors. Now, I must admit, the arguments by this group of AA believers carried a lot more weight before Ray Santilli came forward and said that it was a reproduction of what he was told had happened in 1947. For those of you that need it spelled out in black and white, that means Ray Santilli hired some actors, a special effects team, and a camera crew to shoot his idea of what an alien autopsy would look like back in 1947 inside a tent someplace in the New Mexico desert. Now, although Ray Santilli has stated this, there are still people that now maintain that Ray Santilli is lying to us. He's saying this because he's A, under pressure from some government agency to discredit the truth, B, has suddenly gone insane and should actually be institutionalized, or C, he's being paid a lot of money to help promote a comedic motion picture about the AA film. Now, while most ufologists are saying, finally, Ray Santilli tells the truth, other ufologists have picked up what most of us ufologists were asking all along. Why is Ray Santilli lying to us? Now, staying within the 1947 time frame, there's another group that seems to have latched onto an idea that has proven to be nothing more than a hoax and are completely unwilling to change their mind, even though it's been shown that the idea they're espousing is nothing more than a not-so-elaborate fictional cover-up of a real event. And the group I'm talking about, of course, is the United States Air Force. Back in 1947, they trotted out that what was discovered in the deserts of New Mexico was nothing more than a weather balloon. And they kept up that story through the decades until they finally got the 50-year anniversary of what is probably one of the biggest lies that anyone has tried to pull. This group has resources, though, and they published a book that maintains what was discovered was a weather balloon. But this time, they make it a new, improved weather balloon because there's a whole bunch of them. and they're carrying some scientific hardware. And the whole affair is called a Mogul balloon. Bottom line, it's still a weather balloon. Oh, and the alien beings people claim to have seen, oh, yeah, no. Those were nothing more than parachute test dummies that the Air Force were playing with some 5 or 10 years later, and people just got mixed up in their memories. Now, personally, I love lost causes. I think they're what makes us strong as a race. But I'm going on record saying that planet Earth is round. The alien autopsy film is a hoax shot to make some money. And the crash in the desert near Roswell, New Mexico, was not a weather balloon. And the beings were not parachute test dummies. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange Days, indeed.
You funny guy, Dave Furlong. Yeah. You know, my favorite moment in Roswell, New Mexico, for the 50th anniversary was there was a post office trailer outside Roswell City Hall.
Uh-huh.
And the Air Force are denying that anything ever happened in Roswell. And the post office mobile trailer there is selling Roswell commemorative stamps on an envelope.
Gotta love it.
One arm of the government not knowing what the other arm of the government is doing.
Or just ignoring it completely.
We have to go, my old darling furry. So thank you, sir. Good take. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bud.
Good night. Dave Furlong with us every week at this time. Richard Hall is a legend in the serious study of UFO phenomena and a well-respected researcher among his peers. He's a former assistant director and acting director of the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, NICAP, and consultant to the University of Colorado UFO project sponsored by the Air Force Office of Scientific Research. He's a former editor of the MUFON Journal and past chairman of the UFO Research Coalition, UFORC, and he maintains his own website, and we'll get into a little bit of that in a few moments. He has published many, many articles. In 1968, he published the Encyclopedia Britannica of the Year article on UFOs, the introduction and epilogue in the Mysteries in the Skies, UFOs in Perspective. He edited the book UFO Evidence and several articles in the major appendix with a byline in the 1980 Doubleday Encyclopedia of UFOs. And he has... in the last couple of years, put out the UFO Evidence Volume 2, a 30-year report, which covers 30 years of UFO sightings since 1964 with related data and descriptive features organized by category. He is also, what a list of credits, Richard Hall. He is now publishing the Journal of UFO History, which we will get into as this hour progresses. Richard Hall, welcome back to the program, sir.
Hello.
That list of credits indicates that you have been around the ufological field for more time than you probably care to remember.
That's exactly right. More than I care to remember.
More than you care to remember. And I guess you've seen a lot of changes over the years, the least of which has been the Internet, huh?
Yes. Oh, yeah, there have been many, many, many changes, of course, and technological and otherwise, and the ups and downs of the field itself, where it, in the glory years, as we look back at them now in the 1960s and 70s, when UFOs actually used to be taken seriously. It's been a long time since that happened, but
a lot of the researchers back in those times have either passed on or have just plumb wore themselves out and are frustrated by life, the universe, and everything now.
That's right. I've outlived a number of them. That's true. I hope to outlive several more of them.
And we hope you do too, because there are not any other Richard Holes out there. One or two who may come just a tad close, but none like you, sir.
Well, thank you.
Oh, listen, credit where credit is due. You are my ufological god, Richard Hall.
Oh.
I do have, like many of the people in the field today, have a lot of respect for you and your opinions. You are not a shy man.
No.
I'm not
noted for that, that's for sure.
And when you see BS going down, you point it out very quickly.
Yeah.
And not only BS, but stupidity as well, huh?
Sometimes I should put my mind in gear before I put my tongue in gear, but I don't always succeed in doing that.
And it's good because, you know, you're a man who has lived through a lot of decades of UFO research.
Yeah.
And when you see silliness happening, I think it needs to be pointed out.
I can bring some perspective to bear on it, that's for sure. And a great deal of factual knowledge and experience, and I hope to do that. I certainly enjoy my times when I'm able to participate on UFO updates, because there's some very stimulating discussions that go on there.
Yeah, it's I love doing running that list, though there are times when I throw up my hands when things appear on the screen. I think,
well, I throw up other things.
That's probably a little more information than we need to. But where it's amazing how much how little actual research appears to be going on nowadays, an investigation.
Yes, we have reached an era where people, by and large, it's a generalization, but I think it is generally true that the majority of people have made up their minds one way or the other, and they engage in speculation and theorizing, if you want to dignify it by calling it theorizing. It's not terribly scientific theorizing, as mm-hmm. we've discussed. But yeah, there's an awful lot of off-the-wall opinionizing that goes on, and that turns me off, because I have been very grounded in empirical research throughout all these years. And I have hesitated. I went like probably 20, 25 years without even thinking deeply about what it all meant. I was too intent on gathering data and trying to document it. And so we all had something worthwhile to deal with. But today, people are not ashamed at all to go out there and just shoot their mouths off, whatever.
Mm-hmm. And as you say, opinion rather than based on research. And
yes, it's not terribly based on research, and often when I or somebody else cite some stuff from the past, well, they come, well, that's ancient history, and they're not really interested in it, and that bothers me a great deal, because, as the old saying goes, if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Why do you suppose it is? I mean, I think it's
generational kind of thing, largely. I mean, people have grown up, right now I'm debating sometimes rather heatedly with people who probably weren't even born when I started.
Yeah.
I hate to think of that, but that's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are very well technically trained and all that, and they come in, and there's a certain hubris, or I even want to call it arrogance at times, that's displayed, where they're going to come in and they're going to apply their super skills and they're going to just succeed where we old fogies, you know, failed in the past and that sort of thing. And that really sets me on edge. It ain't that easy, folks. It's a very difficult subject and it's not recognized and we have very few resources. And you have to stay grounded. Otherwise, you go off spinning your wheels and all this wild speculation.
You know, before the internet and the web became prevalent, when it was just BBSs, you know, bulletin boards sort of plugged into one another and passing on the messages down the line and then back up the line, I really look forward to and had this fantasy about, wow, once all of this becomes instant, how much easier it will be to pass on UFO sightings and reports to investigators scattered all over the planet, but relatively close by to any incident that might happen.
Yeah.
And that, unfortunately, has not come to pass.
Well, it's also a blessing and a curse, because you get all kinds of bad information that zooms out there and gets all over the world, and it's very hard to. Mm. There are too few critical evaluative standards applied before people start posting information. That's the bottom line problem.
Mm.
They've got to be more critical and thoughtful about what they're putting up there, and is this really substantial? Is it grounded? I see messages all the time about things that are obviously IFOs to me.
Identified flying objects,
especially fireball meteors and advertising aircraft. We dealt with those all the time. We routinely checked for that sort of thing. And people to this day are amazingly ignorant about fireball meteors. These are not, you know, the stereotype of a meteor, which is like zap, 1 second, 2 seconds, and it's gone. A fireball meteor can last up to 15, 20 seconds, and that's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
If you count it down and look up at the sky and see this great big ball of fire and it goes across there, and I've happened to see two of these in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
They're very, very spectacular, and people just don't understand what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And also, recently we've had various discussions about the Project Mogul balloon thing and balloons being mistaken for UFOs. That's another thing that we routinely investigated and were on top of. Sure, they can cause false sightings, but these skilled investigators can pretty rapidly weed out this sort of thing and get down to the serious reports that really mean something.
Richard Hall, freelance writer, editor, and he's a member of the Authors Guild, too. He has just done some amazing things in his life. He has published so many books, among them Uninvited Guests, which is a wonderful read. The UFO Evidence Volume 2, if you read no other books, you need to read UFO Evidence Volume 2. No UFO book library is complete without that. Richard, have you ever seen a UFO?
No, not one that I would define as a UFO. I've seen a few borderline things in my time. I used to be an amateur astronomer a long time ago and spent a lot of time observing the sky, and occasionally I'd see some fleeting light that didn't make sense, but I wasn't anything approaching a good UFO sighting.
Oh. Well, let's hope that changes in the not-too-distant future. Because I know there are a lot of people who were very, very much involved and very seriously interested in the subject, most of them had never had a UFO sighting themselves.
Well, in my experience, I talked to so many highly impressive witnesses, I didn't need to see something for myself.
Yes.
I'm not one of those people who feels that nothing is true unless I see it or experience it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Australia exists, for example, and I'd love to see it for myself sometime. But but no, I've interviewed so many people over the years. I mean, senior airline captains, military officers, school principals, you name it. I've had people from all over the country and all kinds of professions that describe their sightings to me, and without being in touch with each other, obviously, they were describing the same sort of thing, and that's one of the things early on that impressed me, that we had something very real and important going on, because they had no way of being in touch with each other.
Yeah, and especially back in those days. And as you said, highly credible witnesses.
Yes.
It must bother you, and you must have seen the articles on the UFO updates list and elsewhere, you know, the mocking, scornful, you know, the swamp dwellers
Oh, sure.
who are the only people who see UFOs, you know.
I think I I think I hold my own with most of those people, and so does Jerry Clark. He's very good at dealing with some of the skeptics and debunkers.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, I was mentioning earlier on, as per Lorne Coleman's post to the list today, to the UFO updates list, about it being St. John's Day, June 24th, and today was the day in 1947 when Kenneth Arnold had his sighting of pelicans.
I forgot to mention, that's right, it is Kenneth Arnold Day, so to speak. So.
Yes, and
obviously saw pelicans.
Well, yes, and that has given birth out of the sighting years ago, gave birth to the expression pelicanist in the UFO field for people who believe that what it was that Kenneth Arnold saw were pelicans flying over Mount Rainier out there in Washington State.
By the way, speaking of Jerry Clark, in my Journal of UFO History, I have from time to time conducted interviews, dialogues with prominent people in the field, and I'm very happy to announce that the forthcoming issue is a fairly lengthy dialogue with Jerry Clark, who, of course, is one of the most impressive people in the entire UFO field with his broad knowledge.
Well, and he's another one who's been around since he was, 14, 15, around the field?
Yes.
Yes. I guess you're going through that lightning storm, that electrical storm that you were anticipating in your neighborhood.
I'm keeping an eye on the Weather Channel, one eye on the Weather Channel as we talk, and so far we've only had some rain, but there's a lot of static on the line. You can probably hear it as well.
Yeah, we're hearing it. That's why I mentioned it. Yeah,
and they're still predicting thunderstorms and a couple of inches of rain overnight and all that. So far it hasn't gotten too bad.
Oh, good. And presumably that static electricity or that static noise is being generated outside your phone system.
Yeah, I'm sure it's local. Well, of course, this storm system is all up and down the East Coast, so it's very general, and they're predicting some very severe weather and even flooding up north of here. So,
oh my.
So we'll see, but we'll get this in with a little luck.
Yes. I'm sure we shall. Our guest for the remainder of this half hour is Richard Hall. His current project is the Journal of UFO History. Perhaps you would care to fill us in a little bit on what that is about and how often it comes out, Richard.
Okay. Yeah, I've been publishing this. I'm in my third year of publishing the Journal of UFO History, and it is what I call a publication of the Donald E. Kehoe Archives, Major Donald Kehoe being the Marine Corps officer pilot that was a very important figure in UFO investigations in the 1950s and 60s. And he was my friend and mentor, so I honor his memory with my archives. And the journal is bimonthly, six times a year, 12 pages, photo offset, nicely printed, and I recount UFO history from the earliest years on up, and I reconstruct the history of NICAP, the organization that Major Kehoe was involved in, and I was, and go into citing chronologies and essays and all kinds of interviews and discussions about UFO history, unabashedly history. This, I'm talking 20, 30 years ago and more. It ain't history if it happened in the past few years.
Yes.
But, this is something that people tend not to know that much about because of generational problems and the lack of continuing good publications on the subject and that sort of thing. So I think there's a need for it, and I'm very happy to be publishing it.
Yeah. It's good that you're doing that because, as you say, there's a lack of publications nowadays, and especially in the last, 10 years, where all of the newsletters that people used to put out because it was the only way of communicating a lot of the time, they've all disappeared because of the web.
Yes, indeed, because of the web and because of lack of financial support and because of lack of any kind of official recognition, it all goes hand in hand. Without some kind of official recognition, by which I mean either some government recognition or a significant number of scientists saying, yeah, you should take a look at this. There's none of that existing, and therefore the subject remains sort of in limbo. Unlike the years that I'm talking about, most of which were the subject was taken rather seriously, and major organizations, I mean, American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, people who membership consists of most of the aerospace scientists in NASA and all that sort of thing. They were involved, you know. There were all kinds of very large scientific groups and other technical groups involved in looking at this subject in a serious and even-handed way.
Mm-hmm.
That's gone by the board now, and I think we're in a stage now where not only me, but Wendy Connors and her Faded Discs audio preservation project and Fran Ridge and the NICAP.org website is a wonderful website of UFO history.
There's an astonishing amount of information there.
Yes, and Project 1947, these groups are working to preserve this history before it totally disappears. And somebody made a comparison, I believe, on UFO updates, which I liked. It said we're sort of like the monks in the old days. We're sitting down and scribbling our remarks on a stone tablet or something to preserve them for history.
We seem to spend a lot of time nowadays talking about the old cases rather than investigating the new ones. And it's amazing that in the time that the UFO updates list has been online, the number of times we keep going back to cases. And the current one is the health in photographs.
I think there are two basic reasons for this. One is that there really isn't a good up-to-the-minute investigative organization going today that really jumps on the new cases and systematically investigates them. There's just sort of very loose reporting, you know, fairly uncritical, not very detailed or in-depth. That's a problem, but also the old classic cases are the ones that have been reported so widely in past publications, and there are lots of new people coming along. One getting a lot of attention these days on UFO updates being the Heflin photograph taken in August of 1965, which I happened to be supervised the investigation of for NICAP in Washington. We had a field investigation team in Los Angeles that dug into that in great detail.
What was that case, Richard?
Pardon me?
What was that case?
Okay, that was, this was, by the way, at the very beginning of a resurgence of sightings after quite a few years where there wasn't much going on. And later in August of 65, a big wave of sightings occurred. This was in the first week of, I believe it was August 3rd, 1965, a Santa Ana County, California highway investigator was on the job, his job being to look for road obstacles and problems along the highways, and he saw a UFO. He carried a Polaroid camera in his van to photograph obstructions or any problems that he came upon. So he saw this disc-shaped object and quickly snapped a picture of it right through the windshield and then out the side window and so forth. And then it moved away, and he went down the road and got out and got a final picture of a black smoke ring kind of thing that it left behind as it departed. Now, these have been very controversial, but what do you do if you're a serious investigative organization, as we were? There are two things you can do. One is to analyze the photos to death. Well, we happen to be very fortunate to have the services of Dr. Robert Nathan at Jet Propulsion Laboratory of NASA, state-of-the-art equipment. He was later received high awards for his work on computer enhancement of images from the moon and all that sort of thing. He feared ridicule, so he couldn't be open about his involvement, but he did the work and gave these photos a clean bill of health. There was no string. There was a hypothesis being maybe it was a model. Maybe he faked something. Okay, that's one approach, photo analysis. The other is, who is the guy that took the picture? Is he a likely hoaxer? What is his character? What is his reputation? Now, in that case, this guy, Rex Heflin, I mean, we gave him a security clearance investigation beyond belief and practically moved in with the guy and and it just came totally clean. There's no slightest hint of a hoax or him being a hoaxer of any kind. And even the Air Force investigator who came in from the Air Defense Command, the Air Force quickly put out a statement that this was a hoax based on some very superficial and inaccurate analysis. So they finally sent an investigator around to actually talk to him and talk to his colleagues and all that, and he went away saying, well, this guy is about as honest as they come. There's no reason to consider this a hoax. And that's a documented fact. Even the Air Force, who was very skeptical and didn't want the thing to be real, couldn't find any flaw in his story at all or in his reputation or character. But what else can you do with the picture? And with photo analysis, the only thing you can ever really prove is that that something's a hoax. You can never prove it's authentic by photo analysis alone.
But back in those days, they didn't have any of the modern computer programs that can just very easily fake images. So,
No. He would have had to use a model. Everybody agrees on that. He would have had to hung up a model. The current theory that's being kicked around, which I find rather amusing, is that it was a model train wheel off of a model train, and because he had model trains in his possession. Well, my God, most of us did in our youth.
Yeah.
I mean, so what? Oh, and there's a very interesting point about that, which I haven't got around to posting on UFO Updates yet. My friend and colleague Rod Switek pointed out to me, UFOs, 95% of the time anyway, are simple geometrical forms. They're disks, you know, ellipses, ovals, ellipses, cones. So if somebody gets an authentic photograph of them, there'd be tons of things out there that could have been used to fake it. I mean, that's very obvious.
Yes, chick feeders.
You know, if they were star-shaped or something.
Yes. Yeah. Richard,
a rectangular with an antenna on them, something like that, it'd be harder to get some familiar object to fake them with.
Yes. But. Richard Hall, much revered, much respected UFO researcher from the early days of UFO research, when those things were called flying saucers, I would think, Richard Hall.
Yes, that was the original designation. We had to live that down.
Well, but it's interesting that we've switched from flying saucers, but we haven't managed to get away from little green men. None of whom have ever been reported except in Warner Brothers cartoons.
I'll tell you one thing that bothers me a great deal, which get posted on UFO Updates once in a while, is some news person's article, some wet behind the ears reporter, obviously, who knows nothing whatsoever about what they're talking about, and their stereotypes and characterizations of the subject are just so far off. It's pitiful.
Yes. Well, I take the blame for that. But
well, it shows the state of thinking.
Exactly.
It's good to know that that's what's going on out there. I'm not objecting to them being posted, but I mean, it just shows how poor the knowledge level is on this subject.
Mm-hmm. And for those of you who hear us talk about UFO Updates a lot here, UFO Updates at virtuallystrange.net is the email address there. If you want to subscribe, it's a fairly busy list. The people complain about getting hundreds of emails every day. It's not that bad. But if you want to subscribe, UFO Updates at virtuallystrange.net and put subscribe in the subject line. And you will read people such as Richard Hall and Jerome Clark, as Richard mentioned, and Stanton Friedman. There are many people who work in the field on an ongoing basis who contribute much to the UFO Updates list and have for the last 10, 12 years, as it's getting to be now.
Very lively discussions and debates on just about every facet of the subject. And sometimes you have to pick and choose what threads you want to keep track of, as I have to do myself. But, boy, you can get into some really interesting discussions and debates there.
It is. It's the kind of list that, were I out there, it's the kind of list that I would enjoy reading. Now, I just lost my monitor in here, but I know that Mark is on line one out there in Burlington, Ontario. Good evening, Mark. Hello,
Hi,
Mark. Good, thank you.
Great. Welcome. Long-time listener.
Well, good to have you along, Mark. Good to know you're out there.
I just wanted to know what your thoughts were on the Roswell situation. Do you think it's a hoax? Do you think they really are just testing, U.S. planes? Or what do you think? What's your situation on that?
Okay. I absolutely think the mogul balloon explanation is a lot of nonsense. I have met face-to-face with a great many of the witnesses, not all of them, but I participated in a conference where a lot of them were present, and they're very convincing and very credible to me, and I'm convinced that something far more than a mogul balloon was involved, and I think there is a chance that it was a real extraterrestrial craft of some kind. I don't think there's absolute proof of that, unlike Stan Friedman, who's done a lot of good writing on the subject. I'm not convinced it's 100% proven, but I don't discount it at all. And I do discount the glib write-offs of it as having been a balloon. That just makes no sense. It does not fit the data.
I absolutely agree. I've watched show after show on it, and it just seems like there's too many coincidences and, too many answers for... Sorry, my friend has a question that I have to ask.
If you
go to Roswell and you get too close, do they actually shoot to kill? Or?
No, that's Area 51 in Nevada. Roswell's in New Mexico. Mark, I want to thank you for your call. We have to move on because we got to wind it up. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you, too.
Good night. That's Mark out there in Burlington, Richard, and a pair of noisy lines tonight, his and yours. Yeah, I think that, I don't know, I don't know Richard Hall, my feeling is that that many of us are going to disappear off the planet before anybody finds out about all of this stuff.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Mm-hmm.
I've watched a lot of my good friends that have gone to their reward without ever learning anything.
Yeah, well, when I get over there, Richard, I'm going to contact all of those people, and we're going to come back as a haunting possible.
Okay, that's good. I approve of that.
and if I go before you, if I go before you, I'll wait for you, and then we'll get it together, and we're going to go and haunt a lot of people.
All right, that's
we'll know who they are.
That's a deal.
Okay. Want to thank you for being with us tonight. I know that it's getting to be past your bedtime, and I trust that that all goes well for you, and hope you pick up a whole bunch of subscribers to the Journal of UFO History.
Yes, thank you very much.
Good night, Richard Hall.
Good night.
Thank you, sir. It's been good, as it always is when you're on. Yeah, I like Richard Hall, one of my favorite people out there. Actually, have never met him, talked to him a lot on the phone, talked to him a lot on the radio, and we've exchanged email, but not met in person. And I look forward to doing that one day very soon. I think Richard is one of the people, if I were putting on a conference, I would bring him in and just, give him as much time as he wants to talk. That would be it. There's a website that I have been checking out on a relatively regular basis over the last couple of years, and I've been wanting to get the webmaster of that website, UFODigest.com, on the program. Finally, I made the connection this week, and joining us on the line from his home down near, I guess it's Buffalo almost, Dirk, is that Van der Ploeg? Is that the way that last name is pronounced, Dirk?
It's actually Van der Ploeg.
Van der Ploeg.
Silent G.
Silent G.
Actually, you pronounce it the way they do in Holland, Van der Ploeg.
Ploeg. Yeah, I figured it was a low country's name, a Dutch name, but I wasn't sure how to pronounce it. And I get, the Patrick Huige or Heige, I got confused with several times over the years, too. It's some of those foreign names, you know, that get my brain misfunctioning. But it's good to have you on the program finally, Dirk. You inadvertently became the center of one of the particularly active threads on the UFO updates email list this week, with this posting of yours, the ex-military man photographs UFO over lake.
That's right.
Can you fill us in a little bit on that story?
Sure. It starts off innocuous enough that a ex-lieutenant colonel decides to take his son fishing at the nearby lake. So they go out, and it's around 7:20 in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And after a few minutes, they hear a really eerie sound. So they go and investigate. And as they approach the sound, they see a craft hovering over the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And through the urging, actually, of the little boy, the son, the father does take some photographs, and they're posted on the site. And so far, everybody has attested to the fact that they're genuine. And you were commenting, I was listening to your show, obviously, for the last hour or so.
Yeah.
And you and Richard Hall were discussing the old newsletters, I guess, and how people got information.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, with a list like yours right now, and with friends I have in Manhattan and in Germany, there were so many people getting involved in analyzing the photos and looking at more than the photos. They're looking at possible lapses in time. There's even speculation right now that the craft has landed, and these people had really happened upon that.
And
all this is being investigated as we speak right now.
Yeah. Now, we need to establish, but this retired Lieutenant Colonel Robert G. is not from North America. He's European.
That's right. He's actually in Poland.
Mm-hmm. So all of this happened in Poland, and this was May 22nd this year.
That's right. It was just a month ago.
So really a recent case.
And they seem to be sprouting up. I'm getting at least one a week of some amazing sighting.
Mm-hmm.
And as you and I discussed yesterday, this is uncommon.
Yes.
You could go 6 months without a good sighting.
Or even longer.
Right.
And in looking at the images, and for those of you who are online, you can go to ufodigest.com. Or probably one or the other, either tonight's program listing in the news and information section, there's a link to the page directly at ufodigest.com.
Yeah, it's on the first page.
Mm-hmm. It's right on the first page, and then a link in. The images that are here are pretty startling, and these are close-ups. They're at least the group of four at the top of the page.
Right.
Disc-like. The one on the top right almost looks like a bowler hat.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the witness, the military person, that's how he described it.
And it does, but it also has a shine to it, too, a metallic sheen. There's reflection coming off a couple of the shots here.
That's right. Do you see it looks like, I call them energy patterns.
Yes.
Around the craft.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the telltale things I look for.
Yes.
To see if a photo is being doctored or not. And when you see that, it's usually a sign that there's energy being emitted from the craft.
Yeah, it's interesting. I had a guy bring me some video footage that he shot at night here in Toronto a couple of months ago. And you couldn't see it in the regular vision, but he has one of these cameras that gives you infrared.
Right.
And there was this energy around that, even in the infrared. And you see a lot of this, some people call it a plasma field around these objects.
Right.
And that seems to be fairly predominant nowadays, too, is that, you know, cameras are picking that up.
Yeah, and maybe because of the process with film developing and things, we couldn't get that before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But then you also get the others who say, well, that's, Lord, you know, when you see that around a so-called UFO, it's obviously a sign that the picture is being tampered with. But it's very clear here, especially in the bottom right-hand corner image with the object sort of, you know, you can see the bottom of it and the top slightly tilted. There seems to be a swirl pattern around it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And if you actually enhance the pixels as large as you can get them,
mm-hmm.
then you can see if it's being doctored at all.
And you can actually click and zoom there, too.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done that, and there's nothing there.
It's a very nice website you put together, Dirk.
Thank you. It's taken me years and years and years.
Yeah, you become pretty damn good at it. But I do like the zoom feature there. It's I'm looking right nose up against the screen here. If Donovan sees a smudge on the monitor tomorrow morning, it's my nose.
Right.
You get pretty close up. There are several shots down below of the object over the lake with the tree line.
They're the actual photographs.
And what prompts people to suggest that there is missing time involved here is because of the way the light changes.
That's correct.
And he thought he just fired off, what, five or six shots one after the other.
Actually, he shot a lot of pictures with no UFO or no object in the sky. He just kept, it was almost like he was in a trance, just kept shooting.
So
that tells you something.
Yes.
I have to go back just one sec. The images that you're looking at, four at the top, that you've enhanced, that you zoomed in on.
Right.
Okay, they were prepared by Robert Morningstar from New York.
Hey, Robert Morningstar from New York.
Who's a specialist at this. He's very good at it. As a good friend, and he helped me out on this one.
Oh, good, good. Let's see. So missing time, there is a theory there, and that's because of the change of light in the shots from one to the other.
Apparently they can't account for 22 minutes?
22 minutes, 24 minutes, something like that.
Something like that, right.
Yeah, which is what somebody come up on the updates.
On your list.
Yeah. This is fascinating stuff. You're going to be following up on this.
I am as we're speaking.
Good. His English is pretty good, so presumably he speaks...
He doesn't speak English, though, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, that's what my contact in Poland told me.
Oh.
But we're trying to arrange an interview.
That would be very interesting to get hands on.
It really would.
Yeah, it's, I assume, of course, that you're asking him about missing time, too.
I will.
Mm-hmm. The website is UFODigest.com. The webmaster is Dirk van der Plo. And, Dirk, I'm looking at that image that's shot in Greece that you were leading us into.
If you notice that photograph, the UFO is in the photograph.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to the ones that were taken in Poland.
It's funny, you know, I was looking at the cloud over the hills there at the very bottom in the sunset, I assume it is there.
Right, it is.
And when I first saw this a couple of days ago, I thought, that looks kind of like a small lenticular cloud. And then I realized that there were objects above that, at least four of them.
When I first saw it, I didn't see anything in it.
Yeah.
I saw the same cloud you did and said, she's misinterpreting what a cloud is with a UFO or an object in the sky. But when I did some analysis on this, I mean, I actually think there's 4 to 7 objects in the sky.
Yeah, multiple UFOs photographed in Greece is right on the front page of Dirk's website, UFODigest.com.
You can see how clear some of them have come out.
Yes, in the enhancements, yes, very much.
Really surprising to me. It was surprising to have a photograph like this of a sunset and then have all this activity in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the,
I was impressed. I'm not impressed easy by photographs, but this one grabbed me a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be interesting to see what some of the photo analysts out there have to say about them. Which,
right. No one said too much about this one yet. I think they're all focusing on the Poland one right now.
Yeah. Well, the Polish one is really interesting. And it's the way a couple of people said, aha, a change in the light here, obviously 22 to 24 minutes time difference.
Right.
Which suggests that there is some missing time there, unless, you know, he was aware of the length of time that he shot over.
Apparently he wasn't, and he started off on land taking the photos with his son.
Hmm.
And when he finished and realized that he was taking pictures, he was standing waist deep in the water.
And hadn't realized it.
Hadn't realized it at all.
You know, that's interesting. It reminds me of a story, and I forget where it is, but down in the southern states somewhere, of a guy who had a GPS unit hooked up to his computer, and he's on his sailboat.
Right.
And the computer kept track of where he went on a marine map that he had, you know, had the software in there. He saw a disc. And suddenly the disc wasn't there anymore. When he looked back at the map that the GPS system had drawn across, he had 2/3 of his journey had been over land.
Incredible.
Yes. It's a very strange story, and I haven't heard any follow-up on that one.
Sounds like one of those really bizarre stories that I wrote there.
Mm-hmm. And there are a few. Well, more than a few. There are a lot of bizarre stories, and a lot of them we haven't heard about simply because the people that experienced them were just too weirded out and just absolutely knew for sure that people would call them crazy.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny when this Robert G. first saw the object. You know, I've highlighted it in my story, but he said to himself, good God, aliens don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
He was absolutely positive.
Well, he's a former military man.
There was nothing there.
But. Yeah. He's a former military man, and he would know.
Or so he thought.
So he thought. Yeah.
Actually, it was, with all his training and everything else, it let him down. It was actually his son that urged him to take the picture.
Yeah, to take a picture to show mother, yeah.
Mm. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those stories that you know has to be true just because of the logic of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. How long has your website been up? Let's just drift off a little and
1988.
Get in. 98. Well, you've been around a fair while then.
Yeah, I had some other sites up, I guess, in 95. But when it took on this configuration, it was 1998.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's grown slowly over time, and I think we've probably accumulated over 1,000, maybe close to 2,000 stories now. And we get a lot of contributors from the industry, which is good.
The industry.
It is an industry now.
Picture.
It's a community.
Yeah,
okay, community.
Picture gnomes working the fingers down to the bone on computer keyboards writing UFO stuff.
That's right,
yes.
Getting paid nickels and dimes.
Yes.
If you're lucky.
Yes. You write 500 articles, we give you 50 cents.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. I have a lot of the top magazines now. They're not even paying you.
Well, yeah, a lot of there aren't that many top magazines left.
That's true. There's a handful, I guess.
Well, maybe, yeah. I mean, there's UFO magazine out of California.
There's Fate magazine.
Vicki and Don Ecker, and
there's Fate.
Well, yeah. Oh, of course.
Yeah,
Phyllis Galdi's magazine.
Right.
Good magazine. Mm-hmm. And an interesting article on UFOs over historical sites.
Yes, I read that.
In the current issue, yeah.
Very good one.
Do you find where you're living that it's easy to find Fate magazine?
I don't find it easy to find any up here.
Yeah.
And actually, I live in Waynefleet, which is half hour or so from Buffalo. And for people that know St. Catharines, we're about 40 minutes from St. Catharines, about 30 minutes again from Niagara Falls. We're just on the shore of Lake Erie.
Yeah, it would be even harder for you to find there than it is for us to find in the big cities here.
Oh, you think in Toronto you'd have no problem.
Oh, yes.
Go into any bookstore.
Yeah, right. The only thing you find there is Fortean Times and maybe, if you're lucky, UFO magazine, but no Fate magazine, you distributors there. Yeah, and there's the Brazilian UFO magazine, and we're still waiting for A.J. Guevara to put out an English edition of that.
Well, he keeps threatening to.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Dirk, we have to wander off into the somewhat late sunset in the second day of summer, but we will have you back on, and we shall talk some more. Once you've picked up on the retired colonel story, then more information, come back on. We'll talk about it some more.
Well, Errol Bruce, it was just a pleasure to be on.
It was a pleasure having you. And it's about damn time you were on here. Good night, Dirk Vandepro.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll quit screwing up your name eventually, I promise. Good night. Hey, I have to bail. Thank you to Richard Hall, to Dave Furlott, to Dirk Vandepro, to Julian McNabb here in Toronto, Jim Pacheco, whatever you're doing in Montreal, and to all of you out there, thank you for being out there. Good night.
Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp.